We're in the midst of a series exploring the topic of who is this man. And it's really about the identity of Jesus Christ. Who did Jesus say that he was? Well, who has the world said he was? Who has the church said that he was? If you look at John chapter 7, you see there's a big argument that's brewing up. And it's all about the identity of Jesus. Who is this man? And really the argument ends up about where is he from? I mean, nobody from northern Israel, the region of Galilee, can be a prophet or anything worthwhile, the argument goes. And Jesus changes the dialogue and says, it's not about which part of Israel I was born in. He said, basically, I've come from the Father and I'm returning to the Father. I've come from God, I'm returning to God. I've come from heaven and I'm returning to heaven. And for this, they were spitting mad. They were angry because Jesus was claiming to be equal with the Father. And what it all hinges on was the ability to forgive. Jesus often would forgive people, and the religious leaders of the time, the scholars of the time, got so angry because they said, only God in heaven can forgive sins. And Jesus went about forgiving sins, making himself equal to the Father in heaven, making himself God. It all boils down to the topic of forgiveness. You know, I've talked to people over the years and often ask people, you know, what do you see your purpose in life is? And they'll tell me about their job and what they do and tell me about their family and who they have in their family. And those are super important things in life. But when I begin to ask the question more deeply, why do you think God has placed you here? What are some of the things specifically that you think God could have you do with your life? And often the response I get is, well, I've had different thoughts in my life about what I could do. But I've messed up in my past. 10 years ago, I did this. 20 years ago, 2 days ago, I did that. And because of that, I just don't know if I can ever again be the person I think God was making me to be. I don't think God can use a guy like me because of the failure in my life. I hear that time and time again from people. Maybe you've thought that same kind of thing. You've messed up, you've made some mistakes, you've blown your chance to do things for the kingdom of God that maybe would have been possible if you'd just been a better person. In John chapter 8 then, after John 7, they're having this argument about the identity of Jesus. In John chapter 8, Jesus reveals a bit of who he is. If you have your Bible, turn there into John chapter 8. Let's look at it together and see this. This story is an interesting story because they're gathered at the temple. They're gathered at the church of the day in Jerusalem, outside in the courts, or outside of the temple in the courts. And it was there in the morning time that we see this taking place in John chapter 8, verse 2. At dawn, Jesus appeared again in the temple courts where all the people gathered around him, and he sat down to teach. That was the normal way in that day. The teacher would sit down, everybody else would stand up. We should try that some Sunday. Kind of like that. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in a woman caught in adultery. Talk about embarrassing. Caught in adultery. They made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery." They drug her out into the streets, drug her out to the courts of the temple itself and said, "We caught her. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say?" They were using this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing Jesus. They were so upset at him for claiming to have come from heaven and returned to heaven. They were so upset at him for claiming to be God and have the power to forgive sins that they said, "Well, we'll watch you forgive this one. Because are you going to stand yourself against the Bible of the day," which was what we call the Old Testament, the law of Moses, which clearly said that a woman that committed adultery was supposed to, you take up rocks, you pick them up, you crush her skull, she's done, it's over, and society is a better culture because of it. "Jesus, what do you say?" Take a look at Jesus' next words. "But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his fingers. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, 'Let any of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her.'" Probably one of the most famous lines of Jesus in all the Bible. Again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. We don't know what he wrote. I've often wondered, what did he write? He's down there, he's writing in the dirt. What's he writing? Is he drawing pictures? Is it doodle art? What's he doing? What's he writing? Is he just scribbling, killing time? I'm guessing. This is pure speculation. I'm guessing that when he bent down to write on the ground, he's writing a word or a phrase that makes the person who's holding these stones, they've got these rocks in their hand, they're getting ready to crush the skull of the woman who had committed adultery. I'm guessing he might have written a word that makes this guy over here think, oops, yeah, I've done that. He might have written a phrase over here, another guy, oh yeah, I've done that. Oh, that's me. And one by one, they dropped their stones. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left with the woman still standing there. There she is. I don't know if she had some kind of a blanket wrapped around her or if she was just there completely exposed. Remember, they caught her in the act of adultery. But there she stood before everyone else, before Jesus. Interesting thing, Jesus then, it says, straightened up and asked her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" "No one, sir," she said. "Then neither do I condemn you," Jesus declared. "Go now and leave your life of sin." We look at this biblical encounter that Jesus had with this person with all of her troubles, with all of her problems. I mean, she was guilty. She was caught in the act. And we don't know if she was the one who was married or if the man she was with was the one she was married, or both of them were married to other people. But there was adultery going on, and it was wrong, and it was bad for culture. It was bad for the community of faith. It was just bad in general. And the thought was, let's get rid of her, and we'll make our society, will make our world a little better place in the world. See, Jesus has power of forgiveness, and his power of forgiveness includes what we call cultural transformation, cultural transgressions in the world in which he comes in and brings transformation. And those cultural transgressions can be some of the hardest to forgive. Let me demonstrate with a little example. Nathan, come on up here, would you? Let's get Nathan come up here, and he's going to help me out today. I'm sure glad you came to church, Nathan. Yeah, come step down here in the light because we're just going to have you stand right there. And if you would, we got this little chain here. You ever see something like this? And just stand on the end of it because I kind of need some tension on it. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to, if we can think of some cultural sins, we're going to wrap up this boy and just make him a prisoner of our culture. So let me just ask for some answers back from you first. What are some things that somebody can do to get kicked out of the NFL? Well, that was a lot of answers all at once. Give me, just shout out something here. Okay, drugs would be a good one right there. Yeah, drugs is one of them. What else? Yeah, domestic violence is another one. You don't do that, do you?
No.
Are you married?
No.
Okay. What else? That's not nice. Okay. I'll let you take this home and wrap him up, okay? Now, let me ask, what is something you can do to get kicked out of the NBA? Gambling, referee, yep, did that. Yep, there's more. Think of Donald Sterling. Racism, remember he was the owner of the Clippers, right? And put your hands down there. You don't have freedom, buddy. Okay. What's something you can do to kick out of baseball? What's that? Betting on the game. Pete Rose, my hero, betting on his games, Yeah, that kicked him out. What else? Throwing the game would be one of those. Yeah, back to the Black Sox of the day. What's something else? That was big 10, 15 years ago. Steroids. Do you use steroids?
No.
It's not working. Okay. Okay. What's something you can do to get kicked out of politics? Nothing. What do you mean nothing? There were several scandals that took place, and a lot of them are sexual in nature, and people get kicked out of those things. There's all kinds of, and so we have all these things that are here. You doing okay? Yeah. If he turns blue, somebody let me know. Okay, and so we got all these things. So as a society, we have things that are against the rules. And we watch the video in the elevator, or we hear the audio tape that was made in private, or we read the story in the magazine or the newspaper, and we come to a decision as a culture, as a judgment, that we forgot Michael Vick. Hurting those dogs, you know. We come to a decision that whether the nature, whether the transgression is against our environment or against our world or against animals or our people or money or sexual nature, that people deserve the punishment they're going to get. Let me ask the question: what would it take for me to get fired from this church? Me to get kicked out of ministry? Probably everything this guy's done and a few more things on the list, right? Because we understand that when somebody has sort of risen to a particular position, that more is expected of them. Now, what happens when this is somebody in our community or somebody in our neighborhood or maybe somebody in our church who has done something that has hurt our community? It stained the name of our nation. It's really damaged our church. What do we do? I mean, we can leave this poor guy like this, right? Because it's kind of what we like to do. I mean, really, because he deserves it. The guy got kicked out of 3 sports. Deserves it. But don't we, when we look at Jesus' encounter with the woman caught in adultery, and we look at it at face value, we have to begin to say to ourselves, well, what would Jesus do? And if we're called to have the mind of Christ, according to Philippians, and we're called to do the things he did, to think the way he thought, to speak the way he spoke. We're not Christ, but we're called to be like that, to be like Jesus. Then my guess is that we as a people are to take these chains and remove them from others around us. That doesn't mean he's not guilty. Doesn't mean he didn't do anything wrong. It just means the power of forgiveness needs to be so strong that we can allow somebody from our end to walk away from it. Will there be consequences for his behavior? Probably. Usually. Not always. But we as people who claim to follow Jesus Christ, we don't have even the right to keep someone in bondage when Christ doesn't keep them in bondage. We don't have the right to not allow them to be free when Jesus himself wants them to be free. Thanks. Good job. Have a seat there. And a great job there by my friend Nathan. Okay, now here's where it gets tricky and sticky. Anybody can forgive Michael Vick. Didn't hurt my dogs. I mean, from a distance, I can forgive Donald Sterling and Pete Rose and Ray Rice and whatever, politicians and people that are distant from me and really has no bearing on my life personally, right? I mean, so why? Okay. The question becomes, what do I do if somebody does one of those things to me? How do I respond when somebody hurts my animal? Or does something to my family member, or affects my pocketbook, or takes my possessions? I mean, certainly that changes the dynamic, doesn't it, of forgiveness. Look at what it says in Luke chapter 6. If you have the Bible, turn to Luke chapter 6, and let me turn there as well. In Luke chapter 6, Jesus turns the table away from a cultural issue of a woman who committed adultery, not against any of them, and he turns it right into our face. And he says, to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies. You hear that? Love your, what's it say? Enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. That's a hard list of people. If someone slaps you on one cheek, turn to them the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. Give to everyone who asks you. And if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Then the golden rule, which we often isolate when we quote it, do to others as you would have them do to you. We look at that as like a happy thing. Be nice to somebody and bring them a cold cup of water and they'll bring it to you. This is put in the context of forgiving people who have abused you and hurt you and mistreated you and spoken badly of your name. He goes on to say this. He teaches us, give me some clicker power. Move it on, would you please? My machine stopped working. He says this, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. Anybody can be a lover to lovers. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. There's 34. If you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But, he said, but love your enemies. Do good to them and lend to your enemies without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great and you will be children of the Most High because He is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be merciful. Notice it says, be merciful. Have mercy on someone who's wronged you just as your Father is merciful to you. Summing this up, what is Jesus telling us? What is He looking after? What is He showing us? He says, love your enemies. Bless. Do good. Pray for. Love. People who have messed up your life. That removes it from the arena of an athlete or a politician or a movie star or somebody that's kind of remote and distant from us who've done things you think, really? It makes it very personal, doesn't it? You see, the power of forgiveness also is about personal transgressions. It's not just a cultural transgression in which we have transgressions that are done in society and that kind of damage our world and we're against those. It's about something that's very personal in our lives when someone has hurt us in a way that is very painful. So Nathan, come on back. Come on back. Are you still with us? Great. Okay. And Olivia, could you come up here too? I'd love to have you join us for this party. Okay. And I'd like you to hold on to this and I want you to hold on to the other end of this, if you would. Now, let's just pretend that you've done something really mean to Nathan. This time, you're the guy, you're the innocent victim. You've done something really, get your meanest face on. That's it? Okay. Well, let's just, now you're laughing about it. It was so mean, you think it's funny. Yeah, okay, that's perfect. Now, she's done something horrible and terrible to you, right? Now, you're in a different position. You're not the one all bound up. You're the one in a position to know what to do. But what you do is you just gather more of that chain into your hands and some more of it and some more of it because she's hurt you. She's said mean things. She's done a little bit more of it. Tighten that up. Now, and you know what? She decides she's going to hang on to it, but take a walk away a little bit. And the problem is you're hooked to that. And the pain that she's caused you has made you can't think of other stuff because you're so mad at Olivia. Right? You don't look like it, but right? Isn't this how we do it in life? Someone is wrong. And here's the deal. Here's what happens is even when this person who has wronged you forgets about it, just drop the chain and have a seat and walks away. You're left holding the goods. You're left with all the problem. Because even though she's forgotten about, she might not even have known she did anything. Or maybe she does it to somebody every day. But she's moving on with her life. And you're left, you're harboring this unforgiveness. Does this make sense to anybody? You're holding on to it. I mean, who in this room has had something that you still remember that someone has done to you a year ago, a decade ago, 40 years ago, whatever it is, and you still remember it, and it still causes pain in your life, and you still kind of harbor some resentment toward that person, and this is what it looks like. And it's harder to get things done. Chains, that thing's pretty heavy, isn't it? Carrying that thing around. So the question becomes, what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it? Pretty awesome right there. Three people liked that. Come here, man. So you can walk away from it, man. You're young. You're like, what, 21? How old are you?
Almost 15.
Almost 15. I'm almost 35. Closer to that than 100? Barely. So here's the thing. At almost 15, you know, over the next 60, let's say 70 years of life, you're going to have a lot of people that hurt you. People will say mean things. They'll do bad things. People will disappoint you. They might mistreat you. I mean, it's just part of being alive. It's part of being human. And the deal is, man, that the rest of your life, you can decide, are you going to hold on? Or are you going to let go? Are you going to hold on to that grudge and harbor that bitterness and that unforgiveness? You're not letting go of it because they've wronged you. Or you can decide to drop it and walk away and be free. Because it's a lot lighter now, isn't it? It's a lot lighter. It's an easier way to live life. So the choice is only yours. I can't make it. Your mom and dad can't make it for you. I'm gonna push this a little bit. I'm going to even say God can't make it for you. He put His Holy Spirit within you. But it's your decision, your will, to decide, are you going to let go? And that's the right way to live. Now give it up for Him, all seven of you. Here's what I'm thinking about us. Forgiveness is there's a couple angles on it. One of those is when somebody else has done something that offends our sensibility, then it's easy to stand back and sort of cast judgment or to move on. I mean, 48 hours later, the media's got something new they're covering, and it's easy to sort of, like, we forget about it. But we also sort of judge that person. And I'm saying that when somebody in our community, in our culture, especially in our church, does something which offends what you say, this is the right way to live, we have a choice as the people of God how we're going to respond to that person. We can choose to bind that person up in chains forever and ever and walk away from them, or we can choose to undo it and to embrace them. Now, notice this. Does that mean that therefore we condone the behavior? Doesn't at all. This woman that committed adultery, Jesus said, stop it. Go leave your life of sin. Stop doing this. When we receive God's forgiveness, that's one of the calls, is to walk away from it. One of the call we have is to walk away from it. Can Jesus forgive your addiction? Absolutely. Now walk away from it. Can Jesus forgive your viewing of pornography? Absolutely. Stop doing it. Can Jesus forgive any sin in your life? He forgives any sin in your life. Now stop living that life. You're people who have been set free. You're unbound. You're unchained. You're free in Jesus Christ. And walk in freedom. Walk away from it. Yet the harder piece is when somebody does something to us and we are holding on to that. We're left holding the chain and we just don't, like, I can't just drop this. I've got to get them back. I've got to let them know how they hurt me. I can't just let go. Sisters, brothers, I'm telling you, it's only you that's being held back from that. I mean, you've got to forgive that person because it's an important part for that person as well, but you've got to let go of that so that you can again walk in freedom. Because it doesn't matter whether you're wrapped in chains or holding the chains, it's still going to slow you down in life. And the way we move through it is by loving God. Okay, here's the question. If Jesus tells us to forgive people for cultural transgressions, and he tells us to forgive people for personal transgressions, what is holding you back from living with forgiving in your heart and on your tongue?